This is an AMI podcast.
From your TV, AMI audio is available. TELUS channel 889 and Shaw cable 825. So visit ami.ca/audio for a list of channel locations in your area so you can tune in as well from your television to AMI audio. Kelly McDonald, host of the program with Ramya Muthan.
And once a month, we like to check in with our friend and freelance journalist who brings a lot of incredible stories to the table, Megan Gilmore.
Being legally blind means that I always have to find new ways to find things. And I think journalism is a lot like that, too. I'm Megan Gilmore. I'm a freelance journalist, and here are some of the things I've found recently.
A number of recent human rights complaints allege that the federal government is not providing adequate supports for First Nations adults with disabilities who live on reservations in Manitoba. And this is something we want to focus in on today. Megan, you're going to tell us more about these complaints. Who's filing these complaints? Let's start there and why.
Sure. So there's three separate complaints that are being filed all out of the province of Manitoba. Two are from individuals, so they're being filed kind of on behalf of individual adults with disabilities. And then the third complaint is from a coalition of First Nations families. So some of the individuals who are represented by the individual complaints, they may also be part of the coalition that is filing the third complaint, but that is generally who is filing them. The complainants, so the people who are filing the complaints, are represented by the Public Interest Law Center in Manitoba, which is a legal aid clinic in Manitoba that does a lot of work around, several areas. And one of their areas of practice and focus is people with disabilities. And they've done a lot of cases in the past about funding concerns that are similar to what we'll be talking about here. But these complaints are filed against the federal government, particularly Indigenous Services Canada. And from the complaint from the coalition, so the group of First Nations families, from that complaint, it says, overall, First Nations adults with disabilities have and continue to fall through the cracks of government policies and practices and are treated as second-class citizens. So the complaints are alleging that the federal government, through Indigenous Services Canada, has not been providing adequate supports for First Nations adults with disabilities.
Okay, so when we look at the complaints themselves, what are some of the main allegations in the complaints?
Sure. So one of the main ones is that even though Indigenous Services Canada has stated that the goal of their programs is to, quote, achieve an overall health status for First Nations and Inuit people that is comparable to that of the Canadian population as a whole, unquote, First Nations adults with disabilities in Manitoba are not provided with the necessary supports to achieve the promise of equality under Canada's human rights law. So one of the main concerns that individuals have is that because people with disabilities cannot receive adequate supports if they are living on reserve, they have to leave right. their home communities and live elsewhere. So in some cases, you're far away from your families. There may be a language or a cultural difference. And the human rights complaint would compare that practice of moving people from the reservations as a displacement practice that would be similar to residential schools and 60 scoop policies. The 60 scoop being the time when many First Nations children were taken from their families and put into foster care, often with non-Indigenous families. And then the complaint will go on and it lists like specific areas where the needs of First Nations children is not being met by the government. So there's several, but it would include lack of access to like personal assistance, right? Or people to help you with like toileting or bathing or laundry, lack of access to like clinical therapy and equipment such as wheelchairs. There's concerns that there isn't adequate support to assist with transitions between life stages. So like when you're leaving high school and becoming an adult, you know, all those different things. And then also just several concerns about the lack of culturally specific programming, and that there is a continued gap between what adults who have First Nation adults with disabilities receive and their non-First Nation, non-disabled peers do.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So tell us about Jordan's principle and how it applies here.
Right. So Jordan's principle is a legal obligation on the part of Canada to make sure that First Nations children get the support they need when they need them. And it was named in honor of Jordan River Anderson, who died in 2005 at the age of five. He was from Manitoba, and he was First Nation. His family, I believe, lived on a reserve. And he spent the majority of his life in hospital because there was this disagreement between the levels of government as to who was required to pay for his care. Jordan had several medical needs, and the federal government was like tossing it to the province, who was tossing it to the federal government, and there was this whole jurisdictional dispute about who was required to pay for his healthcare needs. And while the government was trying to sort that out, Jordan was living in a hospital away from his family, and he eventually died, having hardly spent any time at home. So as a result of that, in December 2007, the federal government voted unanimously to adopt Jordan's principle that says that First Nations children will receive the support they need when they need it. And since then, there's been a lot of disputes about that. Many would argue that the government has actually never fully implemented this principle in the way that it is supposed to be done. And beginning in 2016, there were many decisions from the Canada Human Rights Tribunal that Canada and the federal government had failed to uphold Jordan's principle. But what Jordan's principle does allow, when it is used properly, it does allow funding for First Nations children who need certain levels of care. The difficulty is there's no adult version. So up until you're 18, you can get funding for services under Jordan's principle. You can use Jordan's principle to get what you're required to get, but then it stops. And there's no equivalent program for adults, which means at that point, then you're thrust back into that jurisdictional ping pong of who's going to pay for this. And if we move, if my family moves onto a reservation, are we going to get cut off from the services that we need?
Wow. Oh, man. You spoke to one of the women involved, Joni Wilson. What can you tell us a little bit about that conversation?
Sure. So Joni and her two children, a son and a daughter, live in Winnipeg right now. They've been living there for a couple of years. Her son is 19. His name is Aiden, and he is also one of the individuals who is being represented in an individual human rights complaint. So that would be one of the other complaints. But Joni is also part of the coalition that filed the bigger complaint with many families. And she would just say it like that they are forced to live in Winnipeg, whether we like it or not. They have lived on reserve, which is I believe Aiden's father. It's his home community. She has friends and family there as well. And when in the past, when they have moved onto the reserve, she'll talk about like their services would end as soon as their address changed, and they couldn't get what they needed for Aiden's medical needs when they were living further up north with their community. What this has meant for them, besides living in Winnipeg, even though it's not really where Joni would have her children be living and be raising them. It's meant that she's had to turn down jobs that would be quite good jobs, but because they are on the reservation, she just chooses not to take them, because then she won't be able to get what her son needs. And she'll talk about how, like, in her In her home community, it is better than some in the sense that there is a respite home that Aiden could go to if they chose to do that. But that respite home is typically for seniors, for people who are considerably older than 19. And like, what 19-year-old boy really wants to be spending time away from his family with a whole bunch of people who are completely not his age, right? That's not really great for him. So their life for several years has just been trying to live in a place that would allow them to still be receiving the provincial services that they require.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The transition in itself doesn't sound like it's adequate at all. So how is living on the reserve impacted the services that Aiden can receive?
So pretty much it takes the majority of them away. Anything that is provincial would he wouldn't be able to receive it once they're living on the reservation.
Okay. So why did Joni say it was important for people to be able to get those disability supports while on the reservation?
Sure. There's a few reasons. There's concerns about culturally specific programming, specifically if, let's say, the individual who needs supports, let's say Cree is their first language, right? Their first language is an Indigenous language and not English. There's a question of if they're receiving supports in a way that is culturally specific for them. That may not be the biggest concern for Joni's family, but she talks about how, and this is a quote from her, that the lack of services and the inability to receive the services that you need when you're living on the reservation is, in her words, quote, another way that the government is forcing us off of our lands, unquote. So this is seen as just a part of Canada's continued displacement of First Nations peoples. And it would just fit into the longer history of that. Practically...
Yeah, go ahead.
And then practically, you think about how if you have relatives, if you have friends who live in that community, right, you can't live near them. So if something happened and you needed to take care of an elderly family member, but you have an adult child who needs these services, you can't just pick up your family and move back home to take care of someone, right? Like that's not going to happen. So it really, like, can separate families. It makes things very logistically difficult if you're trying to manage different parents, different lifestyles, different relatives all across.
Really just all of this falling through the cracks in terms of dealing with it. Exactly. You reached out to Indigenous Services Canada for a response to all this. Did you hear back from them at all?
No, I have not. There's been some coverage of this case in mainstream media. So these human rights complaints were filed a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of the month, around July 7th to July 8th. And there, in some reporting, you will read statements from Indigenous Services Canada, mainly reiterating what services they provide. But nothing really directly to the allegations and the complaints.
Super upsetting stuff. I mean, first of all, thanks for covering the story, Megan, but really just to hear directly from Joni and her family to be painted this picture of, you know, no choice, but it's really upsetting.
That really gets me. The whole fact that, well, you do this, you know, they get you here, you do that. Well, no. And it's just, what a way to put a person in and their family and people who need assistance in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Joni would say that while it is, in some cases, you could argue it's always more difficult if you're a First Nations family or an Indigenous family accessing disability services, it's even more difficult for the families who are living on reservations. It gets more complicated there.
More complicated than this.
Yeah.
Megan, thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to have to end it there. Appreciate you covering it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Megan Gilmore joins us once a month. She's our freelance journalist.
We'll take a break. And when we return on our Voices segment, we're going to be joined today by our Chatty Books contributor, Ryan Hui. And we're going to learn about his work and journey with diabetes. We'll get into that in a moment.
Learn more about when your favorite shows are on and discover shows that might just become your new favorites. Visit AMI.ca/schedules.